Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And today we're going to get raw. Look at raw. Are you living raw? And we're talking about food, actually. And what do we need to know about it? Is it really cool? Is it really good for you? Of course, raw food would be. But how much do we want to live it? And to help us understand this better is an amazing expert about raw foods. He has a book called Raw Food for Real People, Living Vegan Food Made Simple. And that it's the author on the phone with us, Rod Rotondi. Hi, Rod. Well, I guess Rod's not on the phone. Oh, there he is.
I'm here.
Hi, Rod.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine now. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Great to be here.
I'm really fascinated by your book and by what this is all about. I've been living a very, I think, conscious life about food all my life, and I feel that it's done a lot for me, and yet I've never been a real raw food guy. I eat lots of salads and nuts and seeds and things like that, but I haven't put it together into a raw food cuisine. And I wonder about so much about it because a lot of us aren't informed about what raw food is really about. We think it's about, you know, just a ton of sprouts, bunch of salads. You know, can you really get full? Is it satisfying? And is it too restricted also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Peter, I mean, you already have been eating raw foods, like you said, with the salads and so forth. In fact, everybody is a raw foodist to some extent. I always joke around that even if you just ate a Big Mac, you're about 2% raw foods because you just had a little piece of tomato and some lettuce in your Big Mac. You know, so everybody eats raw foods. And the raw food movement is about just really about taking it a little bit further and getting really kind of back to unadulterated, unprocessed, real food from nature as the main food that you eat. And yes, you can certainly get full. I mean, there's a million. You can make just about anything you want with raw foods. It's just you employ different food preparation techniques, really healthy food preparation techniques, and the possibilities are pretty much endless.
And I've been reading your book, Raw Food for Real People, and it's fascinating to understand so much that people don't know about raw food, that you can actually cook it. People don't realize that raw food can be cooked. What's that?
Yeah, I mean, when you can dehydrate it at low, low temperature, yes. So
right.
It is, in a way, it's heat processed, but very, very low heat.
Right. It's at 110 degrees over quite a long period of time, and it dehydrates the food and actually makes it crispy, crunchy.
Yeah, and so you get all those great textures, yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you might say, well, if I'm eating raw, then how am I ever going to have bread again or pizza again? Well, there's a wonderful pizza recipe in your book, raw food pizza.
Yeah, absolutely. And I grew up in an Italian family with all those Italian foods, and missing them, I came up with raw food alternatives, which are really good. I mean, that pizza is really delicious. I mean, it doesn't taste exactly like a cooked pizza, but it has very similar types of taste, and it's really good. And on its own, it's really good.
Well, we do have to give up some of our cravings for foods that aren't healthy for us. And for instance, I don't drink milk, but I do drink rice milk. And and when I tell people how delicious rice milk is, try it. They try it and they say, well, it's not the same as real milk. Well, to me, it's better. It tastes better too. So I guess we all have to, you know, there's an adjustment we can make about and you talk about it in your book that we do have these addictions to processed foods that we can get over. And really enjoy raw food.
Yeah. We're all addicted to foods. Anyone who grew up in this society, or almost anybody, is addicted to foods. My daughter isn't. I mean, I have a 5-year-old daughter who's eaten just raw foods all her life, and she's never had processed sugar. She's never had, you know, a soda pop or French fries or anything like that. She's just eaten the optimally healthy food all her life.
Well, one thing you say in your book, and it's very real, is that what you force kids away from, they're going to make up for it in unhappy ways.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true, yeah.
So, you know, you have a daughter who's cooperating.
Well, you know, that's all she's ever known, Peter. Both her parents eat that way. So, to her, it's completely natural. She doesn't really... And we educate her. We don't just tell her to eat this. We educate her, and she loves it. She loves that food.
Well, then again, you know, there's peer pressure, too. And my kids ate much better before they got into school, and then they found what other kids were eating. And all of a sudden, it was a different world. And they would trade their healthier lunches for garbage food that some of their friends brought to school. And it was tough. There was some years my younger son would only eat hot dogs.
Boy.
And it's all he would eat. He would rather starve than eat anything else.
And oh, my.
So, you know, there's only so much you can do if kids want to misbehave. And
Exactly. I just figured we're going to give her the best start possible. I imagine that she will eat other things as she gets older. But at least she had a great start.
Yeah.
And we educate her also. I mean, kids, you know, she is sometimes in environments where kids are eating, like, you know, just those sugar cupcakes or things like that. And she doesn't want it. She doesn't want it. She knows for it'll make her not feel well, first of all. I mean, it'll give her a tummy ache. And so she doesn't want that. And she knows that sugar foods is bad for you, and she doesn't want it.
Well, I think one of the good things is that if you're consistent and you're a role model, then whatever kids have to go through to learn on their own, to find out what doesn't work, eventually they can come around to following the role model of their parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was true with my son, who's now eating much healthier.
I'm glad to hear he's not still on hot dogs.
Right. No, he's very careful. He respects the way he's been brought up and understands that, you know, he did need to experiment for a while. I think a lot of kids need to find out what's true for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find out. And as my son did, he found out through how he was feeling and what strength he had and energy he had with one kind of food versus another.
Mm-hmm.
And he found he felt better. And he looked better when he was eating healthier.
No, that's the best way to figure it out.
Yep.
Listen to your body.
And so what I want to ask you is how does one go about this? Because in the book you have wonderful recipes, and they're generally very long. And it's scary because it's like, how much do I want to devote of my time to making raw foods? And you know, it helps to have recipes to get started. And I guess after we get going, we get good at it, and we don't need to look at recipes. We can kind of make it up in our own imagination what works.
Sure. Once you get into it, you can just whip things up. The recipes in the book are very simple. You said they're long. Well, I mean, the description, I give very detailed descriptions on how to make everything. So it's very straightforward for people. But the recipes themselves are extremely simple. I mean, I teach a lot of courses here in L.A. and around the country. And the students are always amazed at how simple they are. I mean, often very few ingredients, and the process is very simple. And people are surprised because a lot of people expect raw foods to be complicated. They expect it to take a lot of time to make it. And it's, you know, it's just, the truth is that raw foods is the easiest cuisine in the world to make. I mean, I've made food from all different traditions, European, Arabic, Indian, Chinese. I've done all kinds of food. Raw foods is by far the easiest. Well, simple to make raw foods.
I think the answer is to first you build your raw food kitchen, and you have your ingredients available.
And that is so important. Yeah.
And once you have it all on a shelf or in a cabinet, you can pull it out very easily, or in the fridge, pull it out very easily, and throw it together. It's just that a lot of these items aren't necessarily what people have available in their kitchens right away. But once you get going with this...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once you get going, once you get into the flow of it, it's really not that hard to do at all. You get into a sort of a rhythm. I mean, we do a lot of soaking and sprouting with raw foods. So you get into the habit before you go to bed at night. You know, next to your sink, you have these jars, and you basically rinse your sprouts or add water to sprouts, and the same thing in the morning. And it takes 2 minutes to do it at night and 2 minutes in the morning. And then you have all the sprouts that you need for your raw food needs. It is simple. It takes a little bit of planning. I mean, it's a little bit different than just throwing something in the microwave. That's true. I mean, definitely there's more time than that, but you know, you're getting really incredibly delicious, healthy, nutritious foods. It's really worth it.
Sure. And let's talk a little bit about dehydration, because I don't have a dehydrator yet. I do plan to start working with one. And what is the joy of working with a dehydrator?
Well, these two techniques, sprouting and dehydration, are two of the oldest food preparation techniques ever employed by man. And raw foods goes back to these two techniques because they work with the food in a way it's... So, for instance, let me give you an example. I used to live for a while in Egypt, in the Sinai Peninsula, and the indigenous people there are the Bedouin, or are nomadic people traveling through the desert. So when they're in the middle of the desert traveling around, what do they do for fresh food? Well, they would bring bags of chickpeas with them, garbanzo beans, and when they got to the spring where the water was, they'd soak the chickpeas for about 20 hours and let them sprout. The chickpeas would germinate and start to grow, going from a dormant to an active state. And then they'd let it sprout for about 2 days, and they'd grow a little white tail, and the chickpea would get nice and sweet and soft all on its own without having to cook it. And then they would just mash it up and add the tahini and the lemon and the parsley, sea salt, and they have basically living hummus right there in the middle of the desert. Of course, they can't do that every day, so what would they do? Well, they'd make an extra batch, and they'd form little balls or little cakes, stick it in a rock in the sun, and by the end of the day, that little ball of hummus is all dried out. It's golden brown on the outside and just warm and yummy on the inside. And that is a falafel. And it's dehydrated. That's how mankind first baked breads. Bread used to be dehydrated in that same way. You have ovens. So again, it's like going back to these early techniques. And when you dehydrate at very low temperature like that, you don't lose any of the nutrition in the food. And when you sprout, you actually gain a huge amount of nutrition. So this is like the healthiest way to eat that actually works with your food.
Well, now let's look at the extent that we can dehydrate different kinds of foods. What are the more extreme kinds of foods that you've dehydrated?
Well, mankind has been dehydrating just about everything for thousands of years. I mean, even when we were like, you know, if in the old days when we were like go hunt a woolly mammoth or something, we'd have all this meat, which would go bad very, very quickly if we didn't do something with it. So we'd cut it up in strips and hang it from the branches of a tree or something and let it dehydrate. Make jerky, basically. I haven't done woolly mammoth.
Okay.
But, I've done every kind of fruit and made pizza dough and breads and crackers and cookies and you name it. All the things that we normally do.
That's, you know, that sounds like a complete way of life. You get your dehydrator and you're taken care of.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting when you say it's a whole way of life. I mean, I do think that, well, some people approach raw foods as a diet, and they just, you know, they eat raw food diet for a little while, and that's all great. But I like to, I think it works best when people adopt it as a lifestyle. Because it really, you know, when you start, it's really about seeing food for what it is, and choosing to eat the foods that actually work for us, make us healthiest, make us feel best, taste delicious. So I really think it always works best when you do it as a lifestyle. It's not just what you eat. It's a whole kind of lifestyle. So you kind of, when you start doing, living that way, your lifestyle is going to determine what your life is like in the end. So people who just want to just do a diet for a while, well, fine, that'll work. That'll work for a lot of people. But if you really want something that's going to last and it's going to really work for you over the long term, then think about it as a lifestyle shift.
This is also about being a vegetarian.
Well, definitely. Yeah, the raw food movement is primarily raw, vegan, and there's three things: raw, which just means it's not cooked at a high temperature; vegan, which just means there's no animal product; and organic, of course, which means it has none of the man-made chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, those things I call slow suicide. It doesn't have any of those in them. So it's just really food in its natural state, the way nature intended. It's not radical. It's not, you know, we are not the extremists, the people who eat raw foods. If you go into a convenience food market and look around at what people eat, that's extreme.
That sure is.
I mean, look at all the chemicals in there, what's been done to that food. You know, all this, people are eating food full of chemicals, hormones, God knows what. It's been broiled, fried, irradiated, and they throw it in a microwave and eat it and expect to be healthy. I mean, you know, wake up and smell the wheatgrass.
Well, one thing that has come to my attention is that raw food is yin. And if we're eating an entirely yin diet, where are we getting our yang?
Well, I'm not an expert in Chinese medicine, but I don't think that all raw foods are yin. I mean, first of all, and the other thing I'll say is that I know that in the Chinese tradition, they think you should cook everything. I mean, basically, they say cook everything, which is quite counter to a lot of the Ayurvedic tradition and other traditions from around the world. You know, I think the idea that I had a discussion with someone yesterday. Someone had told them that, yeah, we don't have the ability to digest food unless we cook it. And that is really so counter to science and just common sense. And when you think about it, we are animals, human beings. And every other animal on the planet eats their food in its raw, natural state. Why would nature have messed up so badly to create human beings who somehow have to cook their food to be able to digest it? It doesn't make any sense at all. And the truth is the opposite. When it's in its raw, natural state, we are more easily and better able to digest it. Well, so I'm sorry, but I don't agree with the whole Chinese medicine approach to food in regards to things having to be all cooked.
Well, one of the things they said is yang, that you can do with your yin food is to add salt. That salt is very yang. So, but I don't know how much you want to salt raw food. Is that something that...
Yeah, we definitely use salt. We use sea salt. But somehow I think there are other foods that we use in the raw food that are also yang. I mean, I bet a lot of the spices are yang. I bet nuts are probably yang.
Right.
The grains are probably yang. I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing.
Uh-huh. Well,
if you eat just, you know, fruit, then you're probably getting a lot of yin, but there's lots of other things that we use.
Well, the man who, a naturopathic doctor who I learned this from, says that men are generally too yin and women are generally yang. He's saying that women are the heartier ones, so they can get along better with more yin food, and that's why men tend to be more like meat eaters, because they need that extra energy that they can't get. But obviously, too many people have proven over the years that you can get plenty of energy from a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet.
Yeah, and all the studies that are coming out are showing that the healthiest diet in the world is a vegan diet. The China study by Dr. T. Colin Campbell is the most comprehensive study of human nutrition ever conducted, and his conclusion is that the more plant food you eat, the healthier and longer you're going to live. To me, all these theories about what you should and you shouldn't eat. In the end of the day, listen to your own body. You know, just listen to your body. Your body is a biofeedback mechanism. You know, we managed to survive on the planet for millions of years without these PhDs in nutrition and nutritionists and all this kind of stuff, because we would eat something. We wouldn't eat it right away. We'd look at it, we'd smell it, we'd touch it, we taste it, and by then we already pretty much knew if it was good for us or not. And then we'd try a tiny little bit of it, and we'd be conscious while we ate it and to feel if it's really good for us or not. We wouldn't be watching the TV. We wouldn't be playing a video game. You know, we'd be conscious while we ate. And that's a great ally, is to be actually pay attention to your food. How does it make you feel?
Well, I think the point is to give your body a choice to give you feedback. So getting started with raw food and then letting your body talk to you, then you can get more messages.
And the truth is, even when you're eating cooked foods, you get messages from your body, especially when you're eating unhealthy foods, when you're eating like the fast food stuff, your body is not feeling very well at all. And if you listen to it, it'll tell you. Unfortunately, a lot of people wait too long to start listening.
Well, now that's what I want to talk about, is the transition. What is it like to change, and what happens to the body? What is there a detox? What's it like when you really switch over?
Well, obviously, it is. Look, everybody does it differently. Some people do it all at once and go, 100% into raw food. And some people take a more incremental approach where they just add in more foods that are raw. I think for most people, the second approach works best. Because really, it's also important to find your balance. I mean, it's not all about eating 100% raw. Every bite of raw food that you take is great. It doesn't have to be 100%. And, we live in a certain society, a certain culture, a certain tradition, and we don't necessarily have to throw all that out, all that tradition, just because we want to be optimally healthy all the time.
If it's not 100%, where do you see the leeway? What foods do you think are worthy of mixing?
Well, everyone has to find their own if they want to mix it. But I mean, basically, cooked vegan foods are can often be great foods as well, and have a lot of good properties and be delicious and fun to make. So those are the foods that I would say people might want to mix it up a little bit with. But again, everyone has to find their own way. I mean, look, everyone's not going to, even a raw food, there are people out there who are raw fooders who even eat meat, raw meat. And, so there's a million ways to do this. And we all come from different types of cultures and families. We have different types of bodies. We're in different levels of health. So, when people are transitioning to raw foods or towards a raw food diet, they can just take it step by step. And I like to get people started with breakfast. I teach them how to make nut milk and smoothies. Teach them how to make spreaded oatmeal. And once you do, I think it's important, if you can start your day with a really healthy breakfast that tastes great and isn't just super nutritious like what I just described, it just sets you up for a really great day. And if you can learn how to make great smoothies for breakfast, then you already got one out of three meals done. And then if you can add in one really beautiful, wonderful salad for another one of your meals, then you can make it with hummus or guacamole or spreaded cheese or great dressings and avocado. And you can put a million things on it, make a really big, hearty, delicious salad. You already get two out of three meals raw. You know, so that's the thing. Just add in and incrementally. And don't, you know, people who want to get good, just go raw and be raw. And they want to, but the point is to be healthy and happy, not to be raw.
But let's look also at climate. Now, you're out in California, and I'm in the Northeast, and it's getting really cold now, and people even farther north of New York are starting to freeze. And a lot of the history of eating natural food in the Northeast in the winter is to eat a lot of root vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And not to eat as many watery foods,
mm-hmm.
Because they weren't able to store them. So what do you recommend for people in really cold climates?
Well, whether food is warming or cooling to your body depends on the minerals in the food, not on the temperature of the food. Now, a lot of people think that you need to eat hot food when it's cold out to keep your body warm, and that's really not true. Psychologically, it has an effect, probably. You know, if it's cold out and you eat a hot bowl of soup, you know, it makes you feel kind of warm inside, but it's really more psychological than it is physiological.
And sometimes you need that because you just came in from the outdoors and you're freezing. What about hot teas?
You know, if it's very hot, then it's no longer raw. Yeah, but you can make a warm tea, you know, like 110 degrees, 115 degrees. You know, that is still raw. You know, but, you know, again, you know, my approach is like, try to eat a lot of good raw foods, and then, you know, if you want to have a hot cup of tea, have a hot cup of tea. You know, I think that some people take it a little bit too far. They're all about trying to be, you know, super 100% pure so they can tell people that they're 100%. You know, that's why, that's really part of their motivation. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that's not going to, that doesn't work for them. It doesn't really help them.
I'm glad you said that. It's not about righteousness.
Really not.
Right.
This is not a religion. This is not an ideology. You know, come on, we've had enough of those.
That's great.
It's about things that work versus things that don't work. If you eat the standard American diet, especially with all of the processed foods, all the meats and the dairy and all that other stuff, people are sick and dying from that. You know, at least 90-95% of the health problems in this country are directly because of the food that we eat.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's just that we're running out of time, and I want to get to the basics of that. This is a great book for people to buy.
Thank you.
Raw food for real people. And how can they reach you?
They can reach me through my website, which is, I have a restaurant in L.A. It's called Leaf, like a leaf on a tree, organics. So my website is www.leaforganics.com. That's the best spot. Or they can also go to my other website, which is rodrotundi.com. And they can also just send me an email at rod@leaforganics.com.
That's great. And they can also come into your restaurant. When are you going to open a restaurant in New York?
Believe me, I would love to. I'm an East Coaster, really. My family's from Boston, and I used to live in New York. Actually, I first got into raw foods in New York 15 years ago. In the winter, by the way. I would love to. I think I would love to open a raw food restaurant in New York. That would be great.
Well, we would love it too. Rod Rotondi, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Great talking to you, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host at Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, HEART, river.org. And thank you so much for listening.